This is a world of hidden mics and two-way mirrors. A world where nothing is private. Harry Call is an expert. The best there is.
What about me?
He can bug anybody, anytime, anywhere. They're not people to him. Just voices.
Hey, I hear myself now. Thanks, Abby. You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I'm Fred Rasko. I'm in the studio with Marley and Will and Abby and Matthew. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it. And since the regular Litz crew is gone today, can someone fill me in on the name of today's show? Abby, you got that?
Our show today is called TF is Up with EU GDPR.
TF. Okay. TF. What is TF? Like in Library of Congress, it's to do with railroads. I don't think that has much to do with EU GDPR.
No.
Marley, what do you think? TF?
Teraflops.
Teraflops of data. Will, what? Any ideas?
So, I mean, I always thought it was the Fink. I mean, that's Finkelstein's my last name. I just kind of assumed it was an homage
to
my family.
The Fink is up with you.
When people would ask me what the Fink is, I just kind of...
Yeah. Matthew.
You know, being that this is an informational show, I guess it's like these facts are what's up with EU GDPR.
These facts
we're talking about today.
That sounds reasonable and sensible. Abby, is that?
I mean, there's always the Fred.
The Fred. I'm being the Fred right now.
That
is what I'm what I am being. Okay. Well, Abby, can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes. So TF is up with the EU GDPR, as in what's up with the European Union General Data Protection Regulation? As in, what is it? What does it mean for libraries? How does it work?
Yeah, TF. And what better guest to help us make our way through all the initialisms of Regulation 2016/679 than a lawyer librarian such as our guest and Gilliland of UNC Chapel Hill.
If you, our listeners, want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS400 for Lost in the Stacks episode 400. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or any other data you might opt in to make public with that hashtag.
And our songs today are about laws and lawyers, efforts to protect data, and cookies, obviously. The EU is trying to get a handle on how to protect personal information because there are a lot of online entities trying to do whatever TF they want with your data, whatever these facts they want with your data, right? Yeah. So let's kick things off with Private Eyes, as suggested by our guest, Ann Gilliland. This is by Hall & Oates, right here on Lost in the Stacks. TF.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and joining us by phone is Ann Gilliland, Scholarly Communications Officer in the University Libraries at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Ann worked in libraries for years prior to earning her JD in 2008. Since then, she has served as the head of the Health Sciences Copyright Management Office at The Ohio State University and has been with UNC Libraries since 2012. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Hi, thanks. I'm very pleased to be here today.
So to start, can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to pursue a law degree while you were working in libraries?
Yeah. Well, you know, I had sort of, this was my midlife crisis. And when I had been working for a virtual library network for the state of Ohio for a number of years, and I was thinking about moving on, but I wanted to do something that was still a bit different than going back to the normal hierarchy of the academic library. And thinking and thinking about that, and really began to think, you know, I love to write, and I don't get as much opportunity at work to do that as I'd like. And one way that I think that I could get a job where I wrote more, and also just sort of learn how to make my writing more focused, would be to go to law school. And so I did, and I went at night for 4 years, and to my great, great pleasure, I started working with copyright after I finished, before graduation. And so it was a happy transition for me.
And can you describe your role now as scholarly communications officer and how that sort of fits with your law training?
Yeah. So, you know, when people say scholarly communications officer, and if you don't work at a library, you are left wondering what the person does. Certainly my family and friends do a lot of times. And a lot of my work revolves around copyright. And for the first few years that I was doing this work, almost exclusively around copyright issues, both for the libraries with digital projects that people were working on, digitization efforts. But then later, as the library I was working for, in this case UNC, moved into the area more of open access, I began working with that sort of subject more and more and more. Also, most people in the position I have, I found, do end up doing some at least troubleshooting on a lot of other legal issues that come up for libraries. You know, somebody has a question about employing a contract worker. You know, they might start by asking me before they try to talk to the university council. And so it's a mixed bag and an emerging field in a lot of ways, which is one of the things I really like about it.
So, Anne, have you noticed since you've gotten your JD, you know, you mentioned that you wanted to get this JD in part because it helped you focus your writing skills. And have you noticed since you've gotten that JD working as a scholarly communications officer, which is a hard position to describe, have you been writing more and using that JD to write about the issues that you face as a scholarly communications officer?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, more writing on the job, writing memos that remind perhaps the university council about why we're doing a certain thing, you know, why we're digitizing this material, but also having to write for an audience of librarians who may not be conversant with all the legal issues, but know the other issues really, really well. And so there's a lot of writing on a variety of levels. And I also found myself really for the first time doing a lot of professional writing. I think partly because there are a lot of emerging issues and, you know, almost every day brings more and more controversies, more decisions to make, and so on. And so it's an area where there is a lot to write about, and I have enjoyed that part very, very much, and had some great collaborations with co-authors.
Speaking of controversies to write about, or issues, I suppose. So back in May, you wrote an issue brief for the Association of Research Libraries on the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, as affectionately known. Can you tell us just very basically for now, what is the GDPR and sort of what are some of its main points?
Sure. So the GDPR is a regulation passed by the European Union. And I know when I first heard about it, my first thought was, well, that's nice for them, but it has nothing to do with us. And I was quite wrong. because the GDPR applies to EU citizens living in or outside of Europe, it may, and to people who are simply also just, you know, based in Europe, even if they are American citizens, for example, it has an effect on most research universities in the U.S., and it is really a very sweeping law that is trying to do a lot of things that, with American privacy law, we have never even begun to try to do, to address so many different parts of the ways that we try to regulate privacy, but often fail. There is, for example, a private cause of action in the GDPR, so which means that individuals can sue, not just a situation where a regulatory agency can swoop in and impose a fine. There are regulations on identifiable information, which gets at the problem of re-identification, where you might have a fairly innocuous file of personal information, but with one combined with another one, it makes it very easy to re-identify a person. It addresses the GDPR addresses the whole issue of what if I have suffered no monetary harm, but I have suffered reputational harm in some way. All of these are things that American privacy law just has not really been able to grapple with.
And I think we're going to get into that more in the next segment. We are speaking with Anne Gilliland of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and we are going to be back with more about the GDPR after a music set.
File this set under KJE6071.A8C66.
There ought to be a law. There ought to be a railroad.
The tide is high, but I'm holding on. I'm gonna be number one.
You just heard The Tide is High by the Paragons. Before that was Street Hawk 2 by Destroyer. Hey, Fred, what do I say when my laundry detergent is spilling out of the top of my washing machine?
That sounds like turbulent fluctuations.
That's the tide is high. Those are songs about the flood of information and the laws and lawyers that have to deal with it.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is all about data privacy, and we are talking to Anne Gilliland about libraries and the General Data Protection Regulation. So, Anne, how is the GDPR different from the legal landscape of data protection in the U.S., and what impact does the GDPR have on the U.S. legal landscape?
Yeah, well, it's very different, and it may have a really profound impact. It's different in the first instance because it is a really sweeping general law, and in the U.S., we have all these little bits and pieces of law that cover data privacy for certain people in certain situations, for certain types of data. And we don't have anything that is as integrated and as broad as this law coming from the European Union is. And I think part of the reason for that is that in Europe, there is a very real sense of the price that people have paid in the 20th century and then also before for private data being available to misuse against people. So totalitarian governments that have known a lot of information about people and have acted in ways that were really catastrophic for a lot of the populations of Europe. And so there is a greater sense of urgency about making sure that data isn't misused again. And also in GDPR, One thing that is really different from most American privacy law is the whole way that punishments, if you will, are handled. If there's a data breach, for example, you know, Target has a data breach and somebody got your credit card number, they send you a notification and they offer you a year of credit checking, but there isn't any real recompense to the people who whose data has been stolen in the ways that the GDPR provides for, where there's just a much complete, I guess, what's the word I'm trying to think of? The ways in which data breaches are handled is much more sweeping and much more related to the conduct that the company or business indulged in that caused the breach. There's also a sense of responsibility goes downstream too. So this is a situation where, let's say, a company has a data breach, but it was caused by a third party. Well, we that wasn't us. They might say in the U.S. that was this other company. Under the EU law, there's the responsibility is broader for downstream uses as well.
So, and in terms of the practical changes that have come about since this law was went into effect on May 25th, what are the implications of implementation? And specifically, I'm thinking of, has there been any charges? You know, you mentioned that there's actual real consequences if data is breached or compromised in some way. Has there been any kind of legal action in the EU towards any company that handled data in a bad or wrong way?
I think there have been charges filed. From the last time I looked, I don't think there had been a disposition of any cases yet. It's still early days. You know, I think the targets of these laws are the largest international companies. People like, or entities like, you know, research universities are not anywhere close to the first target, but companies like Google, obviously Facebook, et cetera,
big ones.
Immediately began dealing with legal action over the GDPR. I think the main thing most individuals in the U.S. have noticed is that every time you go to a website, you have to accept the cookies now, because the GDPR is an opt-in regime, not an opt-out one.
The cookies. So in terms of libraries, and you talked a little bit how, you know, university might not be like the first target for action here, but so at the end of your issue brief, you wrote, in the wake of such incidents as the Cambridge Analytica revelations, libraries as privacy champions should welcome the GDPR's requirements. So I guess in your view, how are libraries privacy champions, and sort of whose data and whose privacy are we talking about for libraries with GDPR?
Yeah. So I think most people would say that libraries are natural privacy champions, in that we protect the right to read and access material without fear that the government's coming to check up on us. That is a First Amendment right that we take pretty seriously. I believe every state in the U.S. has some form of library confidentiality law that protects patron records, so that law enforcement may be able to get to those records with a warrant, but no one who isn't that patron can come in and say at the CERC desk, I want a list of every book Anne Gilliland has out right now. There is a protection there that we have always taken very seriously. I think, you know, the problem today is that it's a little bit harder to make that protection work and still do other things we want to do. And that is the calculation we're all making all the time in our online lives. Well, yeah, I want things to be easier. And one of the ways in which things get easier is if a company knows more about me. And so the corollary with a library a lot of times is the use of Google Analytics, where patrons could be re-identified and I think have been in certain situations. There's also the question, if you're using Google Analytics, you may have certain information anonymized, but Google has the more full information. And they may have safeguards around it, but those safeguards may not be what we would want or what our patrons would want. I don't mean to just pick on Google. There's certainly lots of other examples of systems that we use to track the material people are using in order to improve service, but they also help us track the content, the media that people are consuming and get perilously close to that situation where you know what so-and-so is reading and then perhaps infer what they're thinking and planning as well.
Well, I tell you, I have no problem picking on Google. It kind of scares me how much they know about me. Yeah. You are listening Lost in the Stacks, and we are going to talk more with Ann Gilliland about data privacy and the issues and problems with it on the left side of the hour.
Hi, I'm Matthew Fuller from Centre for Cultural Studies at Goldsmiths, University of London, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the one and only Research Library rock and roll radio show.
Our show today is called TF is Up with EU GDPR, and I am not TF the Fred, I am TF the Friend. And I'm going to read from TF, the FAQs of EU GDPR. So what are the penalties for non-compliance? Organizations can be fined up to 4% of annual global turnover for breaching GDPR or 20 million euros. This is the maximum fine that can be imposed for the most serious infringements. For example, not having sufficient customer consent to process data or violating the core of privacy by design concepts. There is a tiered approach to fines. For example, a company can be fined 2% for not having their records in order, Article 28, not notifying the supervising authority and data subject about a breach, or not conducting impact assessment. It is important to note that these rules apply to both controllers and processors, meaning clouds are not exempt from GDPR enforcement. What about library clouds? File this set under TX652.D49.
That was Don't Say Nothing Bad About My Baby by The Cookies. Before that, you heard Mrs. Toad's Cookies by Klaatu. Fred, have you thought any about some tasty foods lately?
Tasty food? What TF are you getting at, Will?
I don't know. If you want to do it phonetically, you could say tots and fingers, chicken fingers, or tapenade and focaccia, if you want to go that route, or I'm just thinking of a good bread pudding right now. It's getting to be about lunchtime, so I'm getting a little hungry. Those were a couple songs, though, about cookies. Internet browser cookies, of course.
We're talking about personal data, data privacy, and the GDPR here on Lost in the Stacks, and our guest is Ann Gilliland of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So bless you. So, Anne, have you seen changes in specific library policies or specific responses, outreach anywhere since the GDPR took effect?
I would say, I'd say yes and no. I would say yes, that that it is one of the things that has increased awareness and increased concerns about some of the tools we're using and whether they are sufficiently secure. I think they've also increased concerns and questions about the data we collect and why we collect it, and are we storing it securely. I haven't yet seen really significant, we changed our whole approach because of GDPR. Of course, I'm not omniscient, so it could be that I simply haven't observed that yet. And, most large research libraries and most large research universities don't usually move really quickly. So, for example, here we had a group that began studying the law and looking at the data we had and where it was and so on. And that's as far as I've gotten at this point. That is, of course, further than we were before. In with a large organization, you've got data all over the place that you may or may not know about it. And with a large library, it's the same way. So I'm guessing that there will be changes, but I haven't seen an enormous, sea change in behavior yet.
In terms of, how this might affect different parts of the library, I'm an archivist. I'm thinking about privacy in collections that mm-hmm. we have, special collections. Do you think that there's a role that GDPR might, or laws like it, say the one that was passed in California recently, might play yes. in terms of the collections that we have?
Yeah, I do. And this is actually one of my real interests. And I just was in a meeting with our archivist a couple of days ago about PII and re-identification and moving to systems that have better search engine optimization, and what was tolerated in the reading room that may or may not be tolerated online. I think archives, we have an ongoing challenge, like every university, I would say, between the desire to preserve the university's records and the desire to comply with the law and not get sued, and also preserve people's anonymity and privacy. And the historical record, at some point becomes interesting as history, and it is no longer the private details of an individual's life that are as inappropriate to share. But where does history begin is the huge question, and one that nobody's completely figured out yet. We have some guidelines in place for when that might be, so many years after a person's death, et cetera. But it's still a pretty messy subject, and I say that with great love for it, because it is one of my favorite things to work with and think about in library privacy.
And in terms of, databases, catalog systems, affecting libraries, affecting archives perhaps, but in particular on, in the rest of the library, mm-hmm. If libraries are sort of insisting on data privacy and taking this seriously, trying to think about how to implement it, is it right of librarians to expect the same sort of changes from the vendors that we work with as well? And have you seen any vendor adjustment in the EU so far?
What I have heard of from as far as vendors in the EU is, in some cases, an attempt to shift some of the burden of getting consent from the vendor to the library, which I think in most cases is an inappropriate shift. And, you know, of course, the ones I've heard about are the people at libraries who have said, no, you know, if you're gathering data and you need people to opt in, that's on you. So I think that, and I think there will be more of that. And that may be, and I think actually, as I think about it, probably is where we'll first see the effects of the GDPR on libraries. I think the other question, and perhaps even a bigger one and harder to answer, is, you know, what are vendors collecting, and are we okay with that?
So I kind of have something related to that. So actually this summer I was doing a study abroad program in Europe. It was focused on the EU, and so we were talking about GDPR a lot and its implications. And something that always came up is, like, is some loss of privacy inevitable in our current information society? So kind of comparing in Europe, it's this idea of, you know, you need to protect everything. Everyone's data belongs to themselves. And I think in the US we have this perspective of, like, I'm okay giving a cost of, like, a little bit of data in order to, like, live in this online information society. So just your thoughts on that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the, I guess the first comment I make is that we say we're okay, but a lot of times we don't really know what we've consented to. And so some of the, you know, some of the things that have come out in the last few years, well, we consented to, for our friends to see our Facebook posts, but we did not realize that meant that, that whether our Facebook posts could be seen beyond that depended on our friends' settings. You know, there are implications that are not usually terribly well spelled out, and to be fair, are complex. And so, you know, I have often said the same thing, you know, I'm okay with this because that means I don't have to log on every time I want to do whatever. You know, sometimes I see a targeted ad and it's something that interests me, but I didn't think beyond that point. And it is a really hard calculation to make, and one we make without all the information a lot of times. I think, like most people, sort of go back and forth in my own mind as far as what is ethical and also what is right for me as far as safeguarding privacy. So my first thought about the GDPR is, well, this law is just impossible. You know, we can't live like this. But then I went, you know, maybe we ought to give it a try. I think, you know, we are really truly trying to figure out how we navigate this. One thing that I think is super, super interesting is that the information that we have about other people today sort of puts us all back in a small town in some ways. If you've ever lived in a really small town where everybody knows your name and your car and your kid and where you work. And, you know, on Tuesdays, you always go to this cafe. That sense of being known is wonderful and also really hard to deal with in a lot of ways. And we seem to be returning to that, even we've all moved to the big city.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about that small town idea. So we've been speaking today with Anne Gilliland, Scholarly Communications Officer in the University Libraries at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Thank you so much for joining us today, Anne.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking with all of you and getting to know you a bit.
File this set under JC599.U5U54.
You just heard Protection by Graham Parker and The Rumor. Before that was Come Spy With Me by Smokey Robinson and The Miracles. And you know, in the U.S., TF, right, these files are trafficked freely, terabytes following their technical finesse as they take our data. Those were songs about efforts to capture data and efforts to protect it.
Today's show was called TF is Up with EU GDPR. And our awesome board operator, Abby, recently studied abroad in the EU, and the GDPR was a prominent topic of conversation. So what kinds of things were people saying about it, Abby, and what did you think about it?
We definitely got to discuss GDPR a lot this summer, especially being just a group of American students studying in the EU. We got to bring that like U.S. perspective on like this regulation seems so strict, but then also kind of seeing some of the flaws in our own U.S. system. So kind of got to see how from each side of the Atlantic we kind of need to work together to bridge that gap between our privacy regulation.
TF, that's fantastic. All right, let's roll the credits with or without some personal data in them.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WRAK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
And Abby was our engineer today, and the show was brought to you in part by the small town that is the Internet.
Too funny of a comparison, Fred. Legal counsel and implementation of potentially unimplementable provisions were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Anne for sharing her legal know-how with us. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org. And you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and plenty of other places we don't know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what TF is going on next week.
So,
anyway, it's time for our last song today. And in our information society, we may have come to expect to lose control of our information, but in Europe at least, the GDPR is going to protect TF out of personal privacy data. Data privacy, ooh. Maybe things are changing for the better. It's fine. It's totally fine. So let's close with The Landscape is Changing by Depeche Mode right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everyone.